This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com.
Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 111.
111. 111.
We're turning this one up to 11.
Absolutely. 111,
Whoa.
In fact.
Don't try this at home, kids.
Hey, everybody. This is episode 111 of the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and amazing wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And as it is an odd-numbered episode, we are joined by the, guest, but not equally lovely, and yet still lovely, and still wonderful, friend of the show, Mark Spector. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys?
We're good. Are you feeling lovely now?
I feel prettier than I did a few minutes ago, so yes.
Well, I'm trying to help out. So Mark is on the show because Mark is the, grand poobah of the Grand Gamers Guild? Does that work?
Oh my gosh, dude. You literally plucked those words from my mind. That was what was in my head. I cannot believe you said that. You know what that is? That's because you used to watch the Flintstones.
It's been a long time since I've watched the Flintstones, but I did.
But that's what they called the Lodgehead. The Water Buffalo Lodge had a Grand Poobah. There is no other cultural reference point that uses that turn of phrase. So anyway, all right, we are already off track.
You know what's really ironic about that is this is the second time this week that the Guild of the Water Buffalo, or whatever it is, has come up in conversation with us.
Wow.
Yeah, so
it's a zeitgeist.
Who knew?
The Flintstones are making a comeback.
And I mean, I was a pre-John Goodman Flintstone watcher, for the record.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, the cartoon.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, so Mark is the Grand Poobah of the Grand Gamers Guild. We have had Mark on the show before when we were talking about Pocket Ops, which is the tic-tac-toe taken to 11. But this week we have Mark on the show because he's got another game in the hopper, as it were, that also takes some awesome board game gameplay up to 11. Mark is on the show to talk about his game, The Artemis Project, which is on Kickstarter right now.
It sure is.
So this is a little bit of a different game from the kind of things we usually talk about on The Family Gamers, because it's a game that's a little bit more complicated. It's got some more complex mechanics in it. It's a game that's targeted for probably a 13-plus audience. There's nothing about the game that is content-wise inappropriate, but just it's a deeper game, right? So, Mark, why don't you talk a little bit about The Artemis Project, what's going on in the game, the dramatic video that's on the Kickstarter, and what kind of game it is from a mechanic standpoint.
Sure, yeah, that video is amazing. And even if the game is not something that you're interested in, I would encourage you to go watch the video. Josh McDowell, the gentleman who did it, did an amazing job. But so the Artemis Project is the story of the colonization of Europa, which is one of the moons of Jupiter. Jupiter has many, many moons. But from a, I guess it's not geologic, because that would be Earth, but I'm going to use that word anyway. From a geologic standpoint, Europa is covered with an icy crust and has an ocean underneath. So in an attempt to give the game a little bit of scientific grounding, we chose Europa because it is a world, a moon, that is likely to support life, both life coming onto it and potentially have life below the icy crust. So you are competing to build the best colony on Europa over the course of six rounds. It is what we refer to as a dice displacement, set collection, and engine building game, where every round you will roll the dice, you'll place the dice, and then you'll collect resources and recruit colonists and go on expeditions and build buildings based on where you place your dice and how they interact with that of the other players.
So I've done a little bit of homework, imagine that, in advance of having you on the show to learn a little bit more about how the mechanics of this game work. And there's some really interesting stuff. You talk about dice displacement. And I think that that concept, it becomes really strategically complex.
Yeah, definitely. From people always talk about player interactivity. And I think, honestly, while not complex, I do think it is one of the most interactive games I've ever played, and certainly the most interactive game I've ever published. Because, again, when you place your dice down, you're not just doing it to accomplish a goal. In a normal worker placement game where you're placing a meeple, you want something to happen, you place a meeple in that space, and no one else can go there. That's pretty rote stuff.
Sure.
But in this game, if you place a die down, for instance, and you're trying to collect energy, and let's say you put a 4 down on the energy collection track, well, if Anitra comes in with a 3, her 3 will actually go ahead of your 4. It'll displace it and move it one spot to the right.
Now, is that because that's a lower number?
Exactly. Lower numbers are going to supersede higher numbers. Okay. And so, for instance, if there were 7 energy to be collected in a round and you put down a 4 and then Anitra displaces you with a 3, well, I can actually come in with my own 3 and it's going to go after Anitra's 3, but before your 4. So now out of 7 energy that were there to be collected, if the round ends, Anitra's going to get 3, I'm going to get 3, but you're actually only going to get 1 of the 4 because that's all that's left over.
Interesting.
So I have to ask the hard question here. Like, what's the narrative explanation for that?
Honestly, I don't really have a narrative explanation other than to say that, so essentially you're sort of the colony leader. And when you place a die down, you're sort of sending a team on an expedition. So maybe you could think of it as that a 3-person team is more nimble and adaptable than a 4-person team. And that team is more adaptable than a 5-person team.
So you mentioned set collection. What are you collecting sets of?
So at the end of the game, you are going to score for just about everything. And one of the things where you can sort of slyly gain a huge amount of points is by the type of colonists you have. So let me actually go back just a tiny bit. In the game, you are also going to build buildings. And what you do when you build buildings is you place a die on them. The number of pips that you put on that is representing a bid. And that is how many minerals you're going to pay. So now that you've obtained that building and you put it in your colony, you have the opportunity to staff that building. And that is going to help build your engine during the game as well as supply your endgame points. Buildings below the ice build your engine. Buildings above the ice are endgame scoring.
Okay.
Now to your actual question about set collection. So different types of buildings actually require different types of colonists. And at the end of the game, there are 4 types of colonists. There's brown pioneers, there's red marines, there's blue engineers, and there's purple stewards. And at the end of the game, you're going to score 3 points for a set of 4, one of each color. And if you build your buildings carefully and you staff them carefully, it's really easy to create those sets if you're paying attention to it.
Sure.
However, if you're not, and let me be honest, I am more often than not, that is the one place where I fall down in almost every game, is I totally forget about the set collection element. And my sets of colonists are woeful and pitiful. So I gave you a much bigger answer to your question than you expected, but
no, that's all right. I like seeing the big picture of how all the different elements fit together.
Yeah, and that's actually, I don't know if you guys listened to the Ludology podcast, but they did an episode a couple months back that talked about a concept called coupling and how different parts of a game fit together, sort of, and again, I'm going to mess up it a much better job than I'm going to do, but basically how the dominoes fall and what makes the next thing happen, makes the next thing happen, makes the next thing happen. And that is definitely, this is a game that is more tightly coupled in terms of how the different stations of the board interact with one another than than any game I've ever produced. Partly because we've never done a game this big. But even so, there are many big games out there where the pieces sort of operate a little more independently of one another than they do in the Artemis Project.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, and that, of course, plays into one of the other mechanics that is mentioned when talking about this game, which is engine building.
Yep.
So would you like to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So what's going to happen, the engine building is basically taking place with your subsurface buildings. When you buy a building and put it in your colony and you staff it with colonists, there at the end of every round, there's an upkeep phase. And during that upkeep phase, your fully staffed buildings are going to do what they do. So, for instance, I actually, prior to our interview, as you know, I was out at a friendly local game store and guided some folks through a game of the Artemis Project. And the young man sitting across from me had a few buildings. And once they were fully staffed, every round he had a building that generated a colonist for him. I forget the name of the building, but it allowed him to draw a colonist from the bag. So that colonist can then be placed in another building to help it do its thing. The woman who was kitty corner for me actually had a building that generated energy, and then she had a second building that every round she could swap to energy for 1 point. So she had her little engine going. Mm-hmm. She also had a third building that every round allowed her to swap minerals for energy on a one-to-one basis up to 3 per round. So she could swap the minerals for the energy, use the energy to generate points, and, you know, so she kind of had multiple mechanisms going to feed that and could look at that to generate the energy and then see how much she wanted to swap for that point or carry to the next round. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, yeah. There's a lot to that. Engine builders are really super interesting to me because they're present in more complicated games. Anitra thinks that I'm a heavy gamer, but I'm actually sort of like a mid to heavy gamer. So a game like Zulkin has a really, really cool engine building mechanic in it, all the way down to something much more simple like Century Spice Road or Century Golem Edition or one of those games, which have a very basic gem/cube trading engine that you can build in there, all the way to something in between like many, many deck builders that are out there. And it seems like Artemis Project really kind of captures that nice midweight engine building with all of the other pieces, the worker placement / displacement, which is, I think, a really neat, unique mechanic, a little bit of set collection mixed in there, and then you've got your engine builder.
Exactly. And I don't know where your gaming history begins, and obviously I know you're focused, because of the age of your family, on slightly younger skewing games, but if you have familiarity with either Alien Frontiers or Homesteaders, I think the game is a really good mix of those two titles. Not that it duplicates either one of them, but it sort of plucks things from each of them to create its own energy.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm, definitely. All right, so let's talk about the Kickstarter for a little bit. So we're actually only 2 days into your Kickstarter when we're recording this podcast, and you've already just blitzkrieged your goal. That goal's Gonzo, which is awesome. Congratulations.
Yep. So it's not like Minnie's game Gonzo, but it's definitely Gonzo for the Guild. So we're really super happy. I mean, honestly, yeah, pleased as punch.
So there's two things I want to mention kind of right off the top. One of them is that the production value on these boards, I think this is probably a 3D render, but I'm really intrigued by the Recess player boards. This reminds me of something like Scythe. And I've loved those boards in Scythe, where all of the different pieces that you had fit into a recessed player board. And I really like that. That tickles me. And
there is a satisfaction to when things snug into place that is a very visceral and unlike anything else.
It's really weird, huh?
It's kind of like a warm hug for your dice or something like that. Yeah, so what it is, and to be fair, the final design on the recessed player boards is not actually done.
Okay.
What we're really gunning for there is more to have just wells where things can sit so that if you do bump them, they don't go flying around. There's not so much accounting to be done where it's going to fly off a track. We just wanted the nice feeling that your energy and your minerals and your dice are in something as opposed to just on something.
Sure. They have a place to go.
Right.
Exactly.
So to get a base copy of the game, the pledge level is $55.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets the full game with all unlocked stretch goals. And then there's shipping on top of that, which is fine. But then there's an additional tier on here for $10 more where you get 30 metal expedition tokens. Now, I got to be honest with you. Like, I'm not really big on the board game bling thing. But ever since we got our copy of Century...
with the metal coins.
Man, metal coins are awesome.
Yeah, metal is pretty sweet. And, you know, to be honest with you, I am not big on the bling either. But, you know, the psychology of Kickstarter has changed. And backers are really looking for something that the people en masse in retail are not getting. And a lot of times that comes down to metal. You know, we've never actually done metal before, but there's a lot of great companies out there who have, like Tasty Minstrel Games and their deluxified editions. And so I really kind of looked to them and their model of how to do it. And in fact, I mean, I've said this 1,000 times before, I think Michael Mendes has done a tremendous job. And I looked at Tasty Minstrel for quite a number of things, actually, you know, when I look at the company that I want to be. But, you know, essentially, they put this extra stuff in the game. They know that the Kickstarter backers want it. And honestly, as a percentage of production, and I don't necessarily want to dig into the numbers, I'm not sure that you do either, but it's very expensive. And so really, it's just a matter of saying, hey, guys and gals, if this is something you want, we can totally put it in there, but we're really passing the cost directly on to you. And it's not going to be so much like money, which obviously is getting handled and traded back and forth. But obviously, the moving the metal tokens from the expeditions to your player board will be very satisfying in terms of the weight and the tactility and everything like that. So I'm excited to put it out there. And quite frankly, it's funny you should bring it up, because in building the campaign and building the product, it was one of the things I was most nervous about doing. I mean, heck, the campaign's not over. I'm still nervous about doing it, quite frankly, because I need it to come out amazing, right? That's what these awesome people who are backing me are paying for.
Right.
But people like it. I mean, if you look at the campaign and you look at the number of people that have backed the Kickstarter edition versus the Kickstarter Plus Metal. Actually, now they have names. They're called Pioneer and Galileo. The Galileo edition with the metal is like 4-1, 5-1 in terms of the backer response. So clearly it was a good decision.
The other thing that I noticed during my quick scroll through of the campaign is that the next stretch goal, which will probably be hit by the time this podcast is hitting people's ears, is for a fifth player. And I've got to say,
Yay, fifth player.
That support more than four players have become absolutely critical in my collection.
Yes.
Yeah, you know,
it is surprising to me just how many of my games stop at four players. And so I don't feel uncomfortable in saying that the Artemis Project is going to be a 2-5 player game.
No, not at all. And in fact, I'll give you a bit of a scoop. Depending on the Facebook page you pay attention to, it's actually going to be a 1-5 player game when all is said and done. Or at least it should be. It should be. We put some really hardcore development into the solo mode and have been soliciting feedback from the solo-oriented Facebook groups and got some really amazing pithy feedback today that the designers are going to crunch on. But yeah, I mean, I have 3 kids. So when me and my wife and my kids all sit down, having a 5-player option is really important. And obviously yours, again, skew a little younger than mine, but eventually for that reason, unless your family grows, you know, you guys also will require that fifth player among your family. You know, forget about even getting together with friends and such. And it's funny because when you run a campaign and you build a product and you know how you want it to be, and in my case, you genuinely need Kickstarter every step of the way. I am not sitting on a pot of money and this is just sort of icing on the cake. So, I mean, every dollar that goes into this is building the product in a way that it otherwise would not have been possible. So we looked at the campaign. We said, hey, what do we actually want to do? And there was a choice to be made there. Do we do a smaller, more incremental initial goal? Or do we just go, bam, and put it out there and take the leap? And we decided to go fifth player because there are many, many more stretch goals to come. But we know that a fifth player matters to so many people. And so that's what we decided to do.
Well, I appreciate it.
Very much.
In fact, you kind of touched on one of the reasons why we really wanted to have you on the show. So this is a little bit of how the sausage is made for everybody else. What I don't want to do when we have guests on the show is have it basically be a commercial for a product. But Mark, I love how frank and open and honest you are about the realities of the business and talking about, hey, like, there are lots of awesome and amazing games that are out there that, like, literally would not be possible if Kickstarter was not a thing. And, you know, you are a living, breathing evidence of that. And I think that it's really helpful because I think there's a lot of jaded perspectives about Kickstarter, right? To really share with our listeners and our readers how much of a game changer something like this really is, and the super cool stuff that can come from this kind of capital structure, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Guild would not exist without Kickstarter. Now, to be fair, and I have said this publicly, it is eventually my goal to get away from Kickstarter. You know, depending on how well Artemis Project does, there's different size games, like you guys talked about before. Pocket Ops are really small. Mm-hmm. Unreal State and Stroop are not big, but they're not as small as Pocket Ops. In an ideal world, my next, let's call it small box game, I would be able to produce without Kickstarter. The medium and large games are still going to be Kickstarter products. No, sure. No doubt about it. But one day when I have a following, and I mean, not to say I don't have a following. Actually, I have a wonderful following. But when I have a following enough that the subset of that audience is enough to bring a product to life without me using Kickstarter, that's the dream. And believe me, I argue with myself all the time. There's the other marketing part of Kickstarter, which makes me go, you'd be a fool to abandon Kickstarter. And I turn that over in my head almost on a daily basis.
So there's another reason why I wanted to have you on the show to talk a little bit about the Artemis Project. And that is that because, hey, you guys, Mark Spector is good people. And
newsflash.
Yeah. It's super fun to talk about a really cool game with a really cool guy who's putting this stuff together. And P.S., you mentioned a lot of your other products. You mentioned Pocket Ops and Unreal Estate. And as it so happens, I have sitting next to me a copy of both of those games and the Art of Unreal Estate hardcover art book, which is super awesome. And I have this really cool pin that goes with Pocket Ops.
The Doomsday Device pin.
And all of this stuff you have provided to the Family Gamers to give away as a promotional prize with regards to talking about the Artemis Project. And that is super awesome. So what we're going to do, and we actually teased this last week on the show.
We did.
That there was going to be a giveaway. We said nothing about it, but now we are lifting the veil, as it were. And so, Anitra, tell us about what someone could win.
One lucky winner will go home with Pocket Ops, Unreal Estate, the hardcover book, The Art of Unreal Estate, extra promo cards for Unreal Estate, the Gothic Estate expansion for Unreal Estate, and the Sniper's Tower and Orphanage promotional cards. And some extra promotional material for Pocket Ops, including the Hypnotist Specialist token and the already mentioned super cool Doomsday Device lapel pin.
So what we will do is we will create a contest post, as usual, and we will use a contest widget to give this away.
And as usual, you'll be able to enter merely by giving us your email address so we know who to contact if you win, but also by visiting our Facebook page, by tweeting about the contest, following us on Twitter, and all the same things with Grand Gamers Guild as well, visiting their Facebook page, following them on Twitter, tweeting about the contest. And also, you can earn extra entries by signing up for the Family Gamers email newsletter. Hooray!
Yeah, now that it's 2018, we're finally getting into email.
Yeah. Welcome back to the 20th century.
All right. Awesome.
One last thing, Mark. I saw somewhere a little bit of background on how you came up with the Artemis Project. It wasn't originally set on Europa, right?
No, not at all. Actually, so we found the Artemis Project back in summer of 2016 at Protospiel Chelsea. I always forget the city because Chelsea's tiny, and Ann Arbor, the city near it, is big. So we found the game, and it was called Colonies of Venus. But there's been a lot of Venus around, and we wanted to look for a place that was, I don't know, it still sort of had that cachet, but was a little bit further flung than Venus was. We hunted around the solar system, and we also, as I think we kind of discussed a little bit earlier, wanted to find a place that could at least be a somewhat realistic setting for the establishment of a colony. And Europa was it. I mean, there were other choices. We actually looked at a number of moons of both Saturn and Jupiter, but Europa was the winner. And also, why Europa is because, and where Artemis Project actually comes from, is there actually used to be, I don't know if it would be considered a think tank or just some sort of an exploratory research body type of thing, but let's just say there was a group of very, very smart people who got together and looked at the colonization of our moon, hence Artemis from Greek.
Yeah.
Artemis is for our moon. So you might say, well, how did you make the leap to Europa? As part of the Artemis Project, which actually is no longer a functioning body, they also looked at Europa and did some research and exploration into that possibility. So we used a little creative license, and Artemis Project seemed to sort of roll off the tongue and have a little bit of intrigue and a little bit of excitement, and there we go. That's how we got it.
That's really cool. The hardcore science fiction fan in me loves that you went for as much realism as could make sense. Europa is the most likely place in the solar system to be habitable in any way.
And what's really cool, just looking into the not too distant future, NASA is looking at a probe called Clipper that is going to be doing multiple flybys of Europa in the early 2020s, like 2023 to 2025. So I have become a very low level expert on things Europa in the past couple weeks.
Awesome.
That's always the fun stuff, right? It's always the side benefits that that really add color to the whole experience.
All the extra stuff that you learn in the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, well, Mark, is there anything else that you would like to add to the show?
Not really, other than just to say thank you to all the people that have already supported Artemis Project on Kickstarter, and to all the ones who might jump on as a result of you having me on the show. Check out the campaign, and honestly, even if the game is not your thing, watch the video. I think I already said this. It is spectacular. And then, yeah, look for us on Facebook and like our page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Grand Gamers Guild, but you drop all the vowels. And yeah, we'll see you on October 5th when the Kickstarter ends and we can have a victory dance together.
And I expect lots of stretch goals to have been obliterated by then.
I hope so.
So, Anitra, Mark mentioned where you could find Grand Gamers Guild online. Where can we be found?
I don't know, Andrew. Where could we be found other than behind a microphone?
Well, you can find us most easily on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA.
That's A for Andrew and A for Anitra.
That is true indeed. We also have a Facebook community. You can find our community by going most easily to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right there. And we have lots of people who are sharing cool family gamer related stuff, pictures of them playing games with their kids and maybe some deals they found online or whatever it might be in the Family Gamers community. It's a pretty neat place to be.
There's been some great stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
As always, please don't forget to tell your friends about the Family Gamers podcast.
And the Artemis Project.
The podcast in particular, you can find us on Apple Podcast, on TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review.
Yep, reviews are awesome, and they tell other people that you don't know about the podcast, which helps us even if you didn't have to do that much work. You can also find us on the email as well, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored in 2018 by Wild East Games. You can find Wild East Games online at wildeastgames.com or at Wild East Games on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They've got a Kickstarter coming pretty soon, too.
And we'll talk about that when they get there.
Absolutely.
As always, the Family Gamers Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network.
So I think that's going to be it for us this week. So until next week,
play games with your kids.